Nothing's gonna bring Gwen back, I know that. But this is at least a step towards closure and healing for my family.
We're not trying to say that this is indicative of what it's like to be transgender in any way, but we wanted to have very different experiences in the documentary series.
It's not about wanting to be a man or wanting to be a woman. It's about wanting to be ourselves.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Latvian lawmakers move against same-gender marriage. Two U.S. trans teens killers are convicted of murder but not of hate. And gender changes challenge four college members of the trans generation. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 17, 2005. Latvia's parliament this week gave preliminary approval to a constitutional amendment to prohibit same-gender marriages. Current Latvian law already restricts marriage to heterosexual couples. But some lawmakers want a stronger barrier against the movement among European Union member nations to extend legal recognition to same-gender couples, including adoption rights. The proposed amendment was introduced by the religious right Christian First Party, which is a member of the governing coalition and found support among the opposition People's Accord Party. 55 members of parliament voted for it, while the other 44 reportedly either abstained or were absent. It will need to win three more floor votes and approval from a special constitutional commission to go into effect. Juris Lavrikovs of ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, believes the move is politically motivated. When Latvia's first ever Pride March was staged in Riga in July, it served to unite ethnic Latvians and Russians in their opposition to it. As a result, he told the Associated Press, the First Party has found a convenient enemy to attack to rally support in the run-up to next year's elections.
But in the U.S. state of Massachusetts, where a court ruling opened civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples last year, the state legislature this week voted 157-39 to reject a proposed constitutional ban on same-gender marriages. The same proposal, which would allow for marriage-like civil unions, last year passed with 53% of the vote by a similar joint session of the state House and Senate. The change seems to be due in large part to the fact of well over 6,000 same-gender marriages in Massachusetts since May of 2004. One lawmaker who switched sides, Republican Senator Brian Lees, had actually co-sponsored the amendment last year. But after this week's vote, he told reporters, "Gay marriage has begun, and life has not changed for the citizens of the Commonwealth, with the exception of those who can now marry." Another former supporter who changed his vote, Democratic Senator James Timilty, credited the lobbying efforts of lesbian-gay families. He said, "When I looked in the eyes of the children living with these couples, I decided that I don't feel at this time that same-sex marriage has hurt the Commonwealth in any way. In fact, I would say that in my view it has had a good effect for the children in these families."
This week's action by the legislature clears the 2006 ballot of any action on marriage. But another proposed constitutional amendment to deny both marriage and civil unions to same-gender couples could go before Massachusetts voters in 2008. While the now-defeated proposal originated in the legislature, the full ban proposal is following a different route. The Massachusetts Family Institute and other supporters are currently attempting to gather some 65,000 voter signatures on a petition. If they succeed, and if their proposal survives a legal challenge, it will still require votes in two successive legislatures. But it won't take a legislative majority for the measure to reach the ballot. Because it is an initiative, it would take just 25% support, 50 votes each time.
Meanwhile, the U.S. House of Representatives this week gave 53% approval to extending federal hate crimes protections to lesbian, gays, and transgenders. It's the first time either house has ever recognized transgenders, and while the U.S. Senate has approved similar recognition of hate crimes based on sexual orientation on three previous occasions, and the House has indicated its support in two past procedural votes, until now the House Republican leadership has kept the measure off the floor. A federal hate crimes measure has been high on lesbian-gay activists' agenda for many years, but even continuing advocacy from Bill Clinton during his presidency and the widely reported bashing death of gay Matthew Shepard had failed to advance it in the House. The move to acknowledge hate crimes based on sexual orientation and gender identity came as an amendment to the White House-supported Child Safety Act, which the House passed by a large margin. That bill targets sex offenders in a variety of ways, some of which have raised serious civil rights questions. The Senate has yet to take action on a companion measure which does not include the hate crimes amendment. While the vote was largely along party lines, with Democrats supporting and Republicans opposing, 30 Republicans supported the amendment, and 5 Democrats opposed it.
Although the amendment would add sexual orientation and gender identity, as well as gender and disability, as bases for bias crimes leading to harsher sentences for federal offenders, that direct application applies primarily to the relatively few crimes committed on federal land. More importantly, the rider would open the door to federal assistance for state and local authorities in their work on those hate crimes, including grants to support states in prosecuting offenders. A bill to the same effect is in process in the U.S. Senate, but it does not include the gender identity provisions.
Gay-friendly South Beach in Florida has seen an alarming spate of anti-gay attacks over the last year, but one such assault this week rated U.S. national headlines, even though no serious injury resulted. The crime was witnessed by a Miami Beach Reserve police trainee who contacted the department while following the suspects in his car until their arrest. That police trainee was popular 7-foot-1 Miami Heat basketball superstar Shaquille O'Neal.
Scotland's government will soon be introducing a bill to add sexual orientation as a hate crime victim category, leading to harsher sentencing. The existing law recognizes only race and religion for this purpose, but police statistics have shown an increase in homophobic violence in much of Scotland, so a working group on hate crime recommended making those hate crimes a so-called aggravated offense. The Scottish Executive is including the change in its new Scottish sentencing bill. Some religious conservatives have expressed concern that the move might be a first step in the direction of stifling religious condemnation of homosexuality.
In Namibia, it's the government that declaims against gays and lesbians. A variety of activist groups are up in arms at recent remarks by Deputy Minister of Home Affairs and Immigration, Theopolina Moshilenga, in a speech on Heroes Day, warning young people to avoid being misled by what she called the prophets of same-sex love. She called gays and lesbians a slap in the face of African culture and betrayers of a fight for Namibian freedom, and accused them of causing AIDS, the nation's leading cause of death. Lesbian, gay, and human rights activists believe this can only inflame the already high level of hate violence against them, and some believe Moshilenga's speech to violate the law and the Constitution.
South African activists, particularly lesbian gay Zulus, were incensed this week at anti-gay remarks by the Zulu king. King Goodwill Zwelithini spoke to a gathering of about 20,000 Zulus for the Royal Reed Dance Ceremony, an occasion for teaching youth appropriate social behavior as they are tested for virginity. Indicating that lesbian-gay orientation is both un-African and un-Zulu, he declared, "The Zulu nation would not be this big, with millions of people, if there was the problem of gay people that we have today. This new behavior is quickly becoming a threat in our nation because it encourages people not to have proper families that have children. We have a huge responsibility as a nation to teach our children to distance themselves from homosexuality."
Rather than distancing, gay and lesbian pride was a big attraction this week in Wales, as more than 40,000 people from across the UK turned out for Cardiff's annual Mardi Gras. The Pride Festival enjoyed £10,000 support from the City Council and will get £5,000 more for each of the next 3 years from Wales National Assembly. Along with street parties and star-studded entertainment, Mardi Gras marked the launch of the lesbian gay advocacy group Stonewall Kimru's latest campaign against discrimination. Although nicknamed the Mystery Shopper Campaign, the group is actually soliciting reports of all forms of anti-gay discrimination in provision of goods, services, education, and housing.
In Canada this week, one of Quebec's first politicians to publicly identify as a gay man announced his retirement after 20 years in the provincial legislature. The Parti Québécois' André Bolloris, now 59 years old, said it's been a tough decision, but it's time to pass the torch to someone else. He's represented an area that includes Montreal's gay enclave and was an active proponent of equality legislation.
And finally, declared this week the surprise winner of the Venice Film Festival's top award, the Golden Lion, is Brokeback Mountain, set to go into wide release in December. Ang Lee's low-budget indie film, with a script by Larry McMurtry based on a story by Annie Proulx, describes a 20-year romance between two Wyoming ranch hands, played by hetero heartthrobs Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal. The stars insist it's not a gay Western, but a love story set in the West, and Ang Lee has said it's meant in part to undermine the stereotypes of the conventional Western.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 17, 2005. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
The following is a limited time offer. This Way Out listener Dr. Robert Simmons Jr. of Dayton, Ohio, in honor of his mother Mabel Simmons, has issued a donor matching challenge to supporters of this program. Please check out the new information on our website, www.thiswayout.org, to see how your help to keep This Way Out on the air will mean twice as much to us. Thank you. Transitioning through college is difficult enough, but add a gender transition to the mix. There's a groundbreaking documentary about just that later in the program. The second trial in what has probably been the most notorious killing of a transgender person in the U.S. ended this week with second-degree murder convictions against two of the three defendants. The vivacious 17-year-old Gwen Araujo, born Edward, was viciously bound, beaten, and strangled 3 years ago in a San Francisco suburb after her sexual partners discovered her male genitalia. The second-degree murder convictions against Michael Magidson and Jose Merrill carry mandatory sentences of 15 years to life in prison, but the jury rejected hate crime enhancements sought by the prosecution. They also could have issued stronger first-degree murder or lesser manslaughter convictions. Sylvia Guerrero, Araujo's mother, told reporters she was satisfied with the verdicts.
I'm happy with the verdicts. It's been a lot. I mean, it's long nights and long days. And, you know, this jury really put a lot of work into, you know, their decision. And I appreciate that. And the DA's office did an awesome job with, you know, all their hard work and dedication. You know, I'm forever grateful for that. I know a lot of us are tired. I'm tired, and you know, but nothing's going to bring Gwen back. I know that. But this is at least a step towards closure and healing for my family, which is desperately needed at this point.
Guerrero's attorney, Gloria Allred, discussed the significance of the second-degree murder convictions.
Many people in the community were concerned about whether or not the defendants would have been found to have acted in the heat of passion. That is, whether the jury would return a verdict of manslaughter. Obviously, the jury did not buy that. The second-degree murder conviction means that they found that the defendants that they convicted, Magidson and Merrill, acted with malice aforethought. That is why they are going to serve a term of 15 years to life in prison. That's what they should serve. I think as to the hate crime, I don't think the district attorneys had an opportunity to discuss with the jury why they found not guilty on the hate crime issue. But a hate crime charge is relatively new for juries to absorb. And so I think that as jurors get more used to what a hate crime means and where they find the facts fit the law of hate crime, I think in the future, in an appropriate case, there may be findings of hate crime. But I think what's most important in this case is that the district attorney's office did obtain two second-degree murder convictions.
The jury was unable to reach a unanimous verdict for the third suspect, Jason Cazares. This was the district attorney office's second attempt to convict the trio, with a mistrial declared for all three defendants in the first. Prosecutor Chris Lamiero said a decision will be made within the next few weeks about retrying Cazares, but he also seemed satisfied with the jury's verdicts against Magidson and Merrill.
The jury had a brief opportunity to speak with them, and they indicated that they were divided 9-3, with nine jurors being in favor of convicting Mr. Cazares of murder, and three jurors not being quite convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty of murder. Three options: retry the case, find a resolution of some sort, or the case could be dismissed. We'll make the decision that we feel is right at the appropriate time. I think what's important is that by their verdicts today, this jury rejected manslaughter in this case. I thank them for their service. They worked very hard, and they returned the verdicts that they believe were just and appropriate in light of the evidence and the law.
Ricky Wilkins, executive director of GenderPAC, a U.S. trans advocacy group, welcomed the verdicts as definitely a sign of progress, but the fact that the jury did not see this for the hate crime it obviously was means we still have a lot of work ahead of us. Noting that, at minimum, a disproportionate 9 teens of color have been murdered in the U.S. since 2001 because of their gender expression or identity, Wilkins said, "The public must realize the price many Americans pay for not meeting traditional masculine and feminine standards. Until they do so, teenagers like Gwen, especially those of color, will continue to be at risk." With thanks to Cindy Friedman in Los Angeles and Brian Goebel in San Francisco, I'm Greg Gordon reporting for This Way Out.
Hi, this is Georgina Beyer. I'm an MP in the New Zealand Parliament, the world's first transsexual to have been elected to such a position. You're listening to This Way Out. Stay out and proud.
Are you signed up for our monthly emailed This Way Out updates? They briefly preview upcoming programming and give you other behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. We also send out weekly email messages about the specific content of each upcoming show. To receive one or both of these messages, all you need to do is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share, sell, or otherwise provide your email address or anything else about you to anyone, and we never will. Again, to receive the monthly This Way Out update and or our weekly program promo message, ask for them by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. Transgeneration is a Verite-style documentary currently airing as a weekly 8-part series in the U.S. on the Sundance Channel and screening in shorter form at GLBT Film Festival. It uniquely captures a year in the life of 4 transgender college students, 2 male to females and 2 female to males, as they struggle to transition from one gender to the other in the middle of a grueling school year. This Way Out's Steve Pride spent some time with Out director and supervising producer Jeremy Simmons and 2 of the young students profiled.
College life is a transition. Being away from home for the first time, more difficult coursework, and the struggle to make new friends. The new documentary, Transgeneration, spends a year with 4 students who cope with all of this, plus an additional transition, one of gender. TJ, born Tamar in Beirut, Lebanon in 1981, was raised in Cyprus, a small country steeped in tradition.
My name is TJ. I'm 24 years old. I'm a graduate student at Michigan State, and I'm a subject in transgeneration. I had already started coming out as queer identified, and at the time I identified as a lesbian. And I went to a transgender ally training so that I could learn how to be a better ally to trans folks. And it was during this training, when folks were kind of talking about their experiences and their lives, that I realized that a lot of it resonated with me. And so that's when I started questioning things for myself and remembering a lot of childhood memories that I had repressed. Things like, you know, when I was a kid, I considered myself a boy and went to the bathroom as a boy and tried to interact with other boys thinking that I was one of them. So it brought all those memories back for me and made me really look into this a lot more.
TJ is expected to return home to Cyprus after completing graduate work, but his mother has not embraced his gender expression.
She knows that I identify this way. I wrote her a letter kind of explaining who I am. I think the part that we don't share anymore is her own reservations with it. She hasn't been exposed to a lot of this. She hasn't been exposed to a gay community, let alone a trans community. So she doesn't really understand a lot of the mechanics of it. So she's having a very, very hard time adjusting to not having 2 daughters, but having a daughter and a son, and kind of having to figure out how to deal with that within a small Armenian community on a small island.
Director and supervising producer Jeremy Simmons was also the director of the film Party Monster and the award-winning documentary Inside Deep Throat. He says one of the challenges of transgeneration was casting.
We did everything imaginable. You know, we reached out to probably every LGBT campus group in the country. We were on the internet, personal connections, people that we knew. Eventually, we kind of were in that community, and we got several responses back and then ultimately narrowed it down to the people we wanted to meet and took a cross-country tour to meet those people and get them on tape, and then we made our choices.
The four transgendered students Simons found for transgeneration are a diverse group. Besides TJ, there's Gabby, a sophomore majoring in computer science at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Born Andrew in 1984, Gabby struggled with her gender identity throughout her high school years in conservative Colorado Springs. Oklahoma-born Lucas is a neuroscience major who was born Leah in 1983, and although he identifies as male, is currently a senior at Smith College, the nation's oldest operating women's university. The sole freshman of the group is Racy, who was born Roy in the Philippines in 1985 and came to the U.S. with her mother when she was 15. For Racy, the pressure of college is compounded by the fact that she is both hearing impaired and speaks English as her second language.
Part of the casting process was to ensure that we got four very different experiences. Now, we're not trying to say that this is indicative of what it's like to be transgender in any way, but we wanted to have very different experiences in the documentary series. And I just think that that's, you know, that's something that's real that she's dealing with. And this whole series is about how questions of gender come up in their lives, but it's not their entire life. You know, everybody's got their own issues that they're dealing with. And so it's important to get a broad spectrum of all those different things as well.
Another problem Simmons faced in the documentary was that Racy was not out on campus as transgendered.
Racy, that was a big discussion about how are we going to do this? Why does she want to do this? What are going to be the implications of having a camera with her all the time on campus? And after those conversations, listening to what she had to say about it, I felt comfortable that she knew what this meant and knew why she was doing it. And so we went ahead and moved forward.
Hi, I'm Racy Ignacio, and I'm one of the people, transsexuals, in the movie Transgeneration. The hardest part is telling people about what it was. Because, like, wherever I go, nobody knows about it, like me being a transsexual. But then, if there's a camera following me, people start asking, what is this about? And I have to tell them if they're going to be in the camera, in the show. But at first, I would tell them it was just women in college, blah, blah, blah. I was chosen like this, blah, blah, blah. But actually, that hardest part became the easiest part in the end because I learned how to be proud of myself and be confident and tell them, oh, it's about transsexuals in college.
Transgeneration director Jeremy Simmons.
I think that this is a story that a lot of people can relate with. You know, they can relate with what it is to be in college. They can relate with what it is to be kind of going through finding yourself. But the gender question is not something that a lot of people had to look at. And I think that this film allows people to see that in a different way. And it humanizes a subject that a lot of people haven't spent a lot of time thinking about. A lot of documentaries in the past that deal with transgender issues, you know, there's a lot of tragedy involved, you know. There's a lot of dealing with people that have had a really hard time, and those are really valid stories, but here's people that are doing something different, and I think that it's time to tell those stories. There's so many stories that haven't been told yet about this particular issue.
And the best part for director Jeremy Simmons,
just really getting to know these four people so well. It's a very intimate documentary. I spent so much time with all of them, and it's like real quality time because it's a very intimate moments. They're sharing things that they wouldn't normally share, and that bond, you know, I'm sure I'll probably be in contact with them for a long time.
All of the students profiled in the documentary are bright and politically engaged. TJ, who is on a Fulbright scholarship to study in the U.S., says besides misguided stereotypes that transgender people are underachievers, there are other false notions.
I think that what comes out most is that being transgender is all about the surgery. And The surgery is a small aspect of the whole picture. There's so much more to us as trans individuals and as part of the community. A lot of us choose not to go through surgeries. A lot of us take very different paths with it. And also, it's not about wanting to be a man or wanting to be a woman. It's about wanting to be ourselves.
Transgeneration is an 8-part documentary series produced by World of Wonder for the Sundance Channel, with each episode airing Tuesdays at 9 p.m. through November 8th in the U.S. A shorter version is also playing at LGBT film festivals all over the world. For more information on this and other LGBT films, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
'Cause there's something inside so strong. Oh, I know that I can make it. But you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh, no. There's something inside so strong. Oh, no. Something inside so strong. Oh.
We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway. We're gonna do it anyway.
Cause there's something inside so strong. Oh, I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh, I know there's something inside so strong.
Something inside so strong.
Oh, no.
Something inside so strong.
Something inside.
Something inside.
Something inside.
Something
inside.
There's something so strong. It's so.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Sherry Lund, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Thanks also to Brian Goebel. The Flirtations were Out on the Road when they sang Something Inside So Strong, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget you can listen online to This Way Out, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Your help to keep this program on the air will now mean twice as much to us for a limited time. Please log on to thiswayout.org for all the details. Email tworadio@aol.com. Or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 2BBB Bellingen, New South Wales, KHSU Arcata and KHSR Crescent City, California, WEOS Geneva and Ithaca, New York, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.